Patriot Radio, New Orleans. You're listening to Patriot Radio, New Orleans, the number one show in the Crescent City. All right, watch out, Mardi Gras. We are going to have more surveillance. We've got the FBI, the CIA, more technology that we're not even aware of. They said it on the news, Channel 4, WWL, that there will be unprecedented security to keep us all safe. And I'll quote our Mayor Landrieu, if you're in the city of New Orleans on a parade route or not, you can rest assured you're on camera. Now, what if this is a fraud? What do I mean by a fraud? The rationale behind all the intense security is the Boston Marathon and San Bernardino. Well, if you're listening to this show, you know those are drills and a complete hoax. We're going to prove it to you right here on Patriot Radio. We're going to go back in time to the beginning of all the security. 9/11. Was there evidence of who did it? We're going to look into it right here on Patriot Radio. We have the privilege of Raphael O'Neill tonight. She is the chemtrail weather girl on Patriot Radio. So weather modification is the story tonight. We're going to have half the show dedicated to an interview. You want to know the truth. If you think you know about chemtrails, well, you're behind the times. They have new technologies, and if we don't wake up, there is no chance for us all. So this is Patriot Radio, and we're going to dig deep, and we're going to bring the subjects that are not brought up in the mainstream media, and you know that. We also have the truth about Trump and vaccines. It appears that he is more awake than others, but wait, hold on. Melinda Gates is involved, so we're going to have a full report by Pockets of the Future. He's one of the best guys I know, bringing up the truth about vaccines. We must be brave. All right, everyone, kick back, put on your education helmet, and hold tight. We're on a 1500cc freedom machine here, and we want nothing from you. Don't send any donations. Don't go to our website. Just become informed and act upon the knowledge. Why all the security in the city of New Orleans? We're going to have to go back and find out who is responsible. Who's in charge here? This next clip is one of the most telling clips I've ever heard in my life. So pay attention here.
And earlier this month, the always unpredictable James Traficant was released from a Minnesota prison. Now, the former Ohio congressman served a 7-year prison sentence for bribery and racketeering, but he is back out, and tonight he makes his return to the show. And joining us now is former Congressman James Traficant. Congressman, 7 years in prison, that's not a fun experience. Welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me back. From what I understand, after 7 years, your program has gotten much stronger, so I feel honored to be here tonight.
Well, all right. Thank you.
Honored to be anywhere. I'm glad. Hey, Sean, I'm glad to be anywhere.
Well, I believe that. You actually said that you thought, you said this to me in an interview, that you thought you would die in prison. Well, you don't look much different than you did 7 years ago.
Well, thank you. Would you expect me to be wearing prison stripes or something? No, what I said and what I meant was, I believe from the length of the sentence that I received, I think they were hoping that it was a death sentence, that I wouldn't come back and be looking a camera in the eye just like this on a very popular show like yours. So I didn't mean that I felt I was going to be killed, although I was in some situations that were tentative at times.
Well, I can believe that, and I'm sure nobody wants to go to prison. Why don't you, for people that don't know, I mean, here you're one of the most controversial congressmen, powerful congressmen in Washington, D.C., known for fiery...
Don't call me names. Don't call me names.
All right. They're known for fiery speeches on the House floor, and then your life changes. Then you're sent off to jail for 7 years. What was your day like, your average day like in prison, and, you know, what was it like psychologically for you?
Sean, I really don't want to go back and revisit those experiences,
though.
but let me tell you this. I forfeited the future life to make sure that I survived. I'm mad as hell. There's no doubt about it. And I'm looking to get back at the Justice Department and the Internal Revenue Service, and I predict before it's over that I will. I want to get them right by the short hairs. That's how mad I am.
All right, now, so you are going to try and prove your innocence, say you were wrongly convicted.
I don't need to prove I'm innocent. I don't need to prove I'm innocent.
Okay.
I believe there's enough happening now with this fellow, Mr. Okolo, over in Nigeria, who submitted an affidavit to the Nigerian government and said my life was ruined because I wouldn't perjure myself for the Justice Department against trafficking. Now, all of these revelations are coming forward. You stay tuned. You're going to see them, and you're going to be surprised before it's over.
All right. I'm going to stay tuned. We're going to watch it. But let me go back to this other question, then we'll move forward. What was your life like on a daily basis when you go from being a powerful congressman to then ending up in a daily routine in jail? What was that like for you?
I was just like any other inmate, any other convict. And I did what I had to do to survive. And while you brought that up, I want to say hello to Dre Maddox, Freddie McKnight, and a bunch of young guys up there in Rochester. And I believe our country's so screwed up. Nelson Mandela said, Sean, if you really want to see the true character of a nation, you've got to go through their prisons. And boy, I have.
Are you going to run for office again?
I'm not sure yet. I'm looking at it. One way I can get back at the Justice Department, the IRS, is to be a sitting member of Congress. And I may. I have to look at it. I have no money. I don't expect to raise any money. I never did raise money. I was never supported by any political party, yeah, nor the newspaper, so I'd have to run against everybody.
Well, then I wouldn't surprise
And
you.
I just may do that.
I bet there's probably a few nervous congressmen in your district right now, or in and around your area in Youngstown. Congressman, you said something in an interview with our own Greta Van Susteren. You and I got into this on my radio show, and I am shocked, frankly disappointed. And these remarks sound like the conspiratorial, anti-Semitic remarks of people that we have heard from over the years. And what you said was, quote, talking about Israel and quote, Jewish people, they're controlling much of our foreign policy, they're influencing much of our domestic policy. What do you mean by that? Because that sounds to me like a bizarre conspiracy theory. Why would you say something like that when it's just, first of all, patently untrue?
Number one, I served in Congress for 17 years. I've seen members question bills and votes on how does Israel feel about this. I must have heard that every time there was a significant vote. Here's what I'm saying. I'm not an enemy of Israel. America supports Israel, and we should. They're a free nation. They're our friends amidst the cluster of dictators and monarchs. So certainly I support Israel. But Israel, through its lobby, has manifested so much power over the United States Congress that we're embroiled in wars that I don't believe we should be. Our kids are coming back in body bags. And in the long run, this Israeli lobby is going to hurt Israel. So as soon as you mention Israel, someone claims you're an anti-Semite. I don't like what's happening in America today.
All right, that's fair.
Our kids are coming back in body bags.
Wait a minute, but you're saying
we're bankrupt, completely broke.
But you're suggesting here that we're fighting wars on behalf of Israel. But you just mentioned the 9/11 attacks.
I think a lot of that has been influenced by Israel.
We're not fighting the war. We didn't fight the war in Iraq. We're not fighting in Afghanistan for Israel. We're fighting because this country was attacked, because the 9/11 Commission report said there's a group of enemies against us that are fighting a war against us, and we're not at war with them. So we're fighting them because they killed 3,000-plus Americans. That's why we're fighting. That has nothing to do with Israel.
All right, let me respond to that. We're in a situation where the commission come out and they discuss the attack on America. There's no doubt about it. But our policies in the Mideast have been so one-sided and subjective. Without objectivity, we've created so many enemies, the only way they can strike back is we've imported the terrorists from those actions.
Wait a minute.
You're saying you're an anti-Semite.
No, that's not what you did. You said they're controlling our foreign policy. They're controlling our domestic policy.
Yes, I believe they are.
Hear me now.
I believe they control the Senate and the House Foreign Affairs Committee.
That's insane.
And they're controlling our foreign policy.
Congressman, that's conspiratorial nutjob stuff.
Listen, are we
supposed to be friends with Syria? Are we supposed to be friends with Iran? Were we supposed to be friends with Saddam Hussein? Hezbollah, Hamas?
Hold it, John.
Well, you said we're only friends with Israel.
I know you need ratings, but just hold it.
I have ratings.
I'm not saying we should be friends over there with anybody. I'm saying we should be objective. We have developed serious enemies from a one-sided policy. And yes, I believe Israel, through their lobby, has manifested total power of the Congress of the United
States. Total power.
And my concern is the taxpayers and the citizens of the United States should control their government, not a foreign entity.
To suggest, as you're doing here tonight, that they control our Congress, that, quote, they are influencing and the sole control of influencing of our domestic policy, is an absurdity. It sounds like you are a kook.
Sean, I'm not suggesting it. I'm telling it. Yes, I believe they manifest a great power over America. Let me also say, in the last 4 years, there are two separate incidents of AIPAC spying on America. We even conducted a search warrant on AIPAC headquarters. Now, I don't like what's going on here. All I'm telling you is, I'm concerned about America. You and I might disagree. I'm not an anti-Semite. I'm not against Israel. And if Israel's attacked, I'm the first one to want to support them. But what I'm saying to you is this power that is being manifest on our Congress is going to backfire and is going to end up in the long run hurting Israel. Because the American people are getting about fed up with this government.
One last shot at this. Will you back down from, quote, they are controlling much, meaning the Israelis, they are controlling much of our foreign policy. Will you back off that statement?
No, I don't.
All right, then we disagree. Congressman, thanks for being with us.
Good to be on your show. Is there any evidence of Israeli involvement? We're going to go back to around 2001 here. You better pay attention because it's dangerous to try to spell this out for you. You have to think a little bit on your own. George Bush, why do you insist to make a fool of us? For over 200 years, we stood for what's good. Now we despise by peers. This ain't gonna last for long. They wish us dead, George. Yo, they wish us gone. And what do? But add fuel to the fire and send in more troops. Iraqi American rapper times here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
With the Democrats in control of Congress for the first time in the Bush administration, the White House is finally being called to task on various aspects of the Iraq war, from the mishandling of billions in Reconstruction dollars to the use of private military contractors. But there is no congressional oversight on another defining issue of the Bush presidency, 9/11. Questions remain over whether Israeli agents tracking the 9/11 hijackers were tracking the 9/11 hijackers before September 11th.
This one we can't claim as an exclusive. ABC's 2020 did this story. The Jewish newspaper, The Forward, also did it. Salon also covered the story. But where's the follow-up? Freelance journalist Christopher Ketchum has just published a comprehensive piece on this story in the newsletter Counterpunch. The article highlights various interconnected stories. The five Israeli movers who witnesses say were cheering after the first plane struck the World Trade Center, the so-called Israeli art students who were living in concentrated areas where hijackers were living in the United States, and how two of the hijackers ended up on the watch list weeks before 9/11. Christopher Ketchum, the author of the article, joins us online from upstate New York. Alexander Coburn also joins us on the phone. He's the editor of Counterpunch, where the piece is published. And with us here in the Firehouse studio is Mark Perlman. He is the reporter who did one of the first reports on the story for the newspaper The Forward in 2002. Why don't we begin with Christopher Ketchum? Christopher, start off with a story you begin with in this latest piece. And that's the story of the five so-called movers, this story that has been documented, talked about, rumored about. Explain what happened that morning of 9/11.
Sure. Let me just preface this whole conversation just to say that the Counterpunch article does not pretend to provide readers with a definitive smoking gun for these allegations. Rather, what I've done is gathered all the available information on the matter, that is the disparate media reports that you mentioned, leaked documents from FBI, CIA, and the Justice Department, conversations with former intelligence officials and current FBI officers. Now, the upshot of all this available evidence is this. The Israeli government likely was conducting some kind of spy operation on U.S. soil in the run-up to the September 11th attacks. The purpose of the operation was to identify and track Muslim extremists, possibly including members of Al-Qaeda. Now, the best evidence that we have for this is, in fact, the story of these five moving men. Now, three of these guys were seen on the morning of September 11th, just after the first plane hit the North Tower, quote-unquote, celebrating on the New Jersey waterfront. Now, I put the quotes around that because it comes from a FBI BOLO, or Be On Lookout, an alert that was put out regarding these men that day. The celebration apparently consisted of high-fiving, according to one FBI official, of holding up cigarette lighters as if they're at a rock concert. So remember, the plane has just hit the tower, exploded in the tower, and these three men are behaving rather oddly. Later in the day, they were picked up. Two other men had apparently joined them in a van. The case was immediately handed over to FBI counterintelligence. The men were held for 71 days. They were repeatedly interrogated. They repeatedly failed lie detector tests. And then after those 71 days was up, they were sent home, apparently under pressure, or because of pressure brought by the Israeli government and by certain players in the U.S. government, and the story sort of disappeared from there. I mean, 2020 covered this.
Chris Ketchum, you say, you quote the officer who arrested them, named DiCarlo. You say, according to DiCarlo's report, this officer was told without question by the driver of the moving van, Sivan Kurzberg, "We are Israeli. We are not your problem. Your problems are our problems. The Palestinians are the problem."
Right. Well, what's interesting there is that you recall after the first plane hit, no one really thought that this was a terrorist attack. I mean, most people thought, and I was there, you know, on the Brooklyn waterfront watching this whole thing, and everyone thought it was an accident. These guys, when they were interrogated by FBI, told them that essentially said that they immediately knew it was a terrorist attack. And they actually told FBI that the reason they were celebrating was because the attacks would be beneficial to Israel, that it was, a quote, a good thing for Israel. That's according to the FBI spokesman who spoke on the record about this. And that it would bring sympathy for Israel's political agenda in the Middle East.
And if I can interrupt, I'd like to bring in Mark Perlman to the conversation. Mark, it was your newspaper that the Forward that first broke the story that the FBI thought that at least a couple of these people were Mossad agents. Could you talk about that and how you uncovered that information?
Yes, we ended up writing a story in March of 2002 after several months of reporting, because when this incident happened, obviously a lot of people were intrigued, including journalists, and so everybody was trying to find more information about this. And I've been talking to sources and trying to find out a little bit more, and after a while I was able to confirm that according to the FBI, two of those movers were identified as Mossad agents. And they were interrogated about it. Obviously, the circumstances around the interrogation, there was a lot of panic after 9/11. People were looking for suspects everywhere. So the reports about exactly how they were behaving and what they said, we should be a little bit careful about this.
I know. Is Trump really a truther on vaccines?
So I was making a video a couple of days ago about Donald Trump and how the European Parliament was trying to ban him from their country. And I was making a point about how Donald Trump seems to be part of the truth community and his positions on things like vaccines. And I was doing some research on this, and I came across this article from Huffington Post about Melinda Gates. It says, Melinda Gates wishes Donald Trump would stop peddling garbage science on vaccines. And then she says, your job is to be educated and to inform people properly. And there was a related video interview with Melinda Gates, and she said something that was really offensive and kind of stunning. And I'll get to that in just a second. It turns out that Donald Trump's position on vaccines isn't really a good position. He says that vaccines are good, but they can cause autism, and we should spread them out a little bit more, because then they wouldn't cause autism, which is just a political position, and it's disturbingly, I don't know what you would call, stupid. I mean, that makes no sense at all. These things are poisonous, and they cause autism, but just spread them out because they're actually good for you. So this is sort of the fluoride position. So getting back to Melinda Gates. So she's given this interview, and she's sort of lightly slamming Donald Trump and the anti-vaccine movement. She's talking about how science has proven over and over again that vaccines aren't related to autism, and all these types of talking points. We've heard them all before, that the anti-vaccine movement's based in junk science. And then she says something that's really horrific and offensive. She says, it is why the world is getting better and healthier over time. It's because of the miracle of vaccines, the miracle of vaccines. Now, when you're a parent and or you're a person who's connected to your body and you have some level of consciousness of the world around you, and you fall sick or your child falls sick, you can usually pinpoint the factors that led to your illness. This is something that alert, healthy, natural people can do. You kind of come up with, well, I was in this area, there's these sick people, I haven't been eating lately, I haven't been sleeping, or you eat something bad and it makes you sick, or you get food poisoning. Often you can figure out what's going on in your own body without having extensive tests done. People are sort of aware and alert. And so there are hundreds of people, probably thousands of people. I just posted a video of this on my Facebook page that someone had posted on Facebook. It's a great interview with this woman. And she vaccinated her child. And she watched her child crumble in front of her. And he lost all of his abilities, his ability to speak, his ability to feed himself, totally regressed. People have seen this over and over again. They vaccinate their child, and immediately the child just crumbles and just falls apart and goes into this autistic state. And they know, and the doctors know, and everybody knows that the vaccine caused it. before the vaccine, they were fine. After the vaccine, this has happened time and time again. Now, we've lived in a sane society. People would say, yeah, this is a, there's a correlation here because this is scientific documentation. If you give somebody a vaccine and they fall apart, now, this has happened with adults. This happens to people all the time. A post-vaccine healing crisis where a person is devastated after getting a poisonous vaccine. So to call these things miracles, imagine just the arrogance and the manipulation, the evil here. Not only that, her husband is being sued for doing illegal testing. Her foundation, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, is being sued in India because they tested some of their horrible vaccines on village people and kids died. And this isn't the first time that people have died from these so-called miracles. I mean, her husband, Bill Gates, gave that TED Talk where he talks about reducing the population, that vaccines and I believe GMO foods and other things, I forget the exact quote, will reduce the population by maybe 10 or 15%, and that isn't enough. So that is that the miracle of vaccine, that it reduces the population in some way? I mean, what is the miracle here? Now, think about this. Just if vaccines worked, and you have all these man-made diseases of poor living, all these types of, a bad diet, bad lifestyle, going against nature, all of these types of things. So we have all of these illnesses out there. And somebody comes up with a vaccine or some sort of medicine to cure some of these illnesses. That's not a miracle. If it's just something that's organic and it's herbal in nature, it doesn't have any side effects, and it cures some disease that's killing a lot of people, that isn't a miracle. You're just making a medicine. There's nothing miraculous about this. There's a disease, and you find a cure. That's not a miracle. And so even if these things were good, that's a huge overstatement. But to call this a miracle when we know that vaccines have caused people pain and suffering and death for many, many years now, it's bad science. It bypasses the natural immune system, which you would say that's actually a miracle. I mean, it's natural, it's nature, it's from God. But the way the human body works, the way that our immune systems work, the way that everything functions in nature. And so anything that's just these abominations, these man-made medicines that always had side effects and there are always problems with it, those aren't miracles. At best, they're good medicine, but vaccines aren't good medicine. And the policies that the Gates Foundation has thrust on specifically poor people throughout the world are about depopulation and eugenics, and we've seen this time and time again, and it's really despicable that she would use the word miracle in association with these poisons.
2016, this is show number 3. Now, we rarely have a guest, but we will have one tonight. Her name is Raphael O'Neill. She is the chemtrail weather girl, the super hot weather girl, who's been on Patriot Radio for many years now and has been a staple on the show. And I understand she's going to be on the Jim Fetzer show this Monday night, and we'll try to set everyone up with links and make sure that they hear it. Plus, they'll hear it here as well. And if you're listening to this show, you will hear her on The Real Deal with Dr. Fetzer. So, Raphael, thank you for everything you've done. You're a warrior at heart, and just tell us what's new. I understand there was a weather conference in town. I attended one a few years ago, and I'll just tell you this. The local weather people are completely lost. They must be under some psyop or whatever, but they have no clue what you're talking about as far as those funny lines in the sky. So I'm going to hand it over to you and let you basically guide us through. You're in the captain's chair now.
Sure. Yes, thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to have a stage to voice this very important issue, which is actually the probably the most important environmental issue you are not being told about. And granted, there are many, and none of this negates the fact that we have a lot of issues that are detrimental to our environment and even to climate. but there is nothing that you can do to stop climate change that would be able to fix climate change or global warming if you have not also addressed the global climate engineering that is going on multiple levels, individual levels and unilaterally as well, and we're going to get into what all that means. Now, I don't know the level of expertise that your listener has on the issue of chemtrails. And yes, when you talk about chemtrails, you cannot get any answers that are taking you seriously by any government official. That includes meteorologists. And I have I'd like to wax poetic on that a little bit later into the level of involvement and denial that officials have. You know, is everybody like laughing at us? Is this a big inside joke we're left out of? Do people really believe it? What are the different levels of understanding when it comes to the lie that is, that the massive lie that involves the subject and keeping it from the mainstream? Even though, and we'll get into this if you allow me to, the history of weather modification, climate engineering, and some people may not know what the difference is, but is hiding in plain sight. So we can't deny that, but it's not being addressed on a public level. And when you talk about chemtrails, you will never get an acknowledgement. Now, if you want to talk about climate engineering, which is what I went to the American Meteorological Society this past few weeks to meet with the meteorologists there and to see. I wasn't an actual attendee. I kind of guerrilla warfared my way in. We had a educational display we set up outside in the Starbucks area before we got thrown out, fortunately, at the end of our day. But it was very interesting and educational to speak with people there, climate scientists and meteorologists and people who surplus that whole industry and different levels of involvement and engagement and knowledge. And I really truly believe that there are different levels of knowledge in that. There are people who are conspiratorial in there's like a gag order that's been placed, and that's an actual gag order. And when it comes to you get people that know a little bit about the subject and they find out that you're asking questions not generally but specifically, then all of a sudden they're not experts anymore on it and they can't tell you anymore on it. I can get into some of the points on this. When I went there, I heard some of the points that meteorologists had in believing that climate engineering was actually responsible for climate change. Now, here's the points on this subject, is that geoengineering, first of all, because what's going on in Paris and Paris climate conference, and I believe that was the true reason, I mean, this is theory, but the true reason for the terrorist attacks in Paris were to create this buffer zone where you can't get anywhere near the climate change talks. Very conveniently at that time, all of a sudden, no activist is allowed to get anywhere near it. The real issue going on is when you create an environmental crisis of this caliber, it becomes too important for little people like you and me to vote on. And so it is no longer a matter of local politics and administration. It now goes into a too big for the city state to decide, and it's the, you know, Agenda 21, global governance. In fact, we were told that the environmental crises will be the key that unlocks global governance. Don't have all my paperwork and quotes organized completely in front of me. There are so many aspects of this conversation. It's not in there. It says a new thing I found recently. But let me just go saying. So right now they're proposing, what they were proposing is saying, we may not like this, but we may need to geoengineer this may be something that we may have to insist everybody does, is geoengineer to save the world from global warming. But here's the number one talking point on that aspect, is stop right there. Regardless of any other research, geoengineering cannot cure or help mitigate climate change or global warming. Yes, it might have a short-term cooling effect, but as an IOP study has shown, geoengineering by means of sulfate aerosols is predicted to accelerate the hydroxyl-catalyzed ozone destruction cycles and cause a significant depletion of the ozone layer, even though future halogen concentrations will be significantly reduced. This is an IOP Science paper, The Impact of Geoengineering Aerosols on Stratospheric Temperature and Ozone. So that means, basically, yes, it will be reflecting sunlight. There'll be a higher reflectivity. The albedo will rise, but it does create a holes in the ozone, which we all know it creates global warming. So how can this emergency fix actually fix things in the long term? This is a Band-Aid. So that isn't capable of actually fixing the problem long term. And geoengineering and climate engineering have been going on in plain sight for decades. Now, that's not even, you cannot even question this. In front of me, I have a paper called Committee on Commerce, Science, and Transportation, United States Senate. It was written in May 1978, U.S. Government Printing Office, 1978. And it starts off saying that the federal government has been involved for over 30 years in a number of aspects of weather modification through activities of both the Congress and the executive branch. Since 1947, weather modification bills pertaining to research, support, operations, policy studies, regulations, liabilities, activity, reporting, establishment of panels and committees, and international concerns have been introduced in the Congress. So they know about climate engineering. I mean, this goes way back, and that was decades old way back then. And here in the same document I'm citing, in a recent article, they cite that in a recent article contributed by the Tri-State Natural Weather Association to a nationally circulated publication devoted to organic agriculture, the following evils supposedly brought on by weather modification were cataloged. I am not going to go into all of them. But one, cloud seeding has been responsible for the great five-year drought in the northeast United States. Two, isolated sections in the northeast have experienced 18 years of drought due to cloud seeding. Three, weather disturbances in the South Atlantic have been eliminated and has reduced the East Coast rainfall by 30%, rain that is indeed needed if agriculture is to be successful. The average dairy farmer on the East Coast living in an area of cloud seeding has averaged a net financial loss because of cloud seeding. Cross production losses in Franklin County, Pennsylvania alone have amounted to $50 million. When effects of seeding wear off, cloudbursts occur, causing floods, destroying crops, buildings, and drowning people as well as livestock. Seeding has been responsible for the serious air pollution problems. Mental retardation and insanity are traceable to cloud seeding chemicals. Poisoning of all living matter is directly related to cloud seeding. Emphysema, cancer, financial losses, forest trees, atmosphere, yada, 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 yada. Okay, so I don't want to bore everyone with this fascinating detailed document. These were complaints back then. Okay, so, you know, how many more years of experimentation? How much? Now, here's another thing before we move on. Well, these are individual projects. They just got poo-pooed on. That's, page 320 of this document. ICAS report number 15A prepared in 1971 proposed a program for accelerating national progress in the modification of weather through consolidation of a number of prime government weather modification efforts into seven key projects. A lead agency was designated for each of the proposed national projects. The national projects were defined as multi-agency efforts of major national significance, which were considered to have near-term potential for meeting identified national needs. So there has been a cooperation between states, between projects, an intelligence centralization of this information, which is not making the news. And I mean, the weather modification history goes even beyond that. I mean, right before this document, 10 years before this document, we weaponized weather in Vietnam, extending the monsoon season significantly, and I think yielding, coaxing 30% more rain out of the clouds. So cloud seeding is a very effective tool. It has been weaponized. Congress didn't find out about it for 10 years. And then the UN made the NMOD treaty saying, no weaponizing weather, kids, which, of course, doesn't stop naughty children from playing when no one's looking, or making sure no one's looking when they're playing. So that's the second point is that we know climate engineering has been going on, and it's been going on for decades. Evidence of climate engineering is right in front of us. Now, some people say, well, is it deliberate or is it consequential? And it's almost irrelevant, and here's the point. Even if contrails are just jet exhaust, condensation, water vapor trails, their effect on weather and warming is well substantiated, severely underreported, and misrepresented in both weather forecasts and the climate change conversations. Why? All right, so we have another document here from NASA. I'm going to restrain from giving you my full opinion of that agency, but they have some really good raw data. if you don't take the whole thing, the importance of understanding clouds. Even small changes in the abundance or location of clouds could change the climate more than the anticipated changes caused by greenhouse gases, human-produced aerosols, or other factors associated with global change. So, wow, let's go back, because we don't want to miss this. Even small changes in the abundance or location of clouds could change the climate more than the anticipated changes caused by greenhouse gases, human-produced aerosols, or other factors associated with global change. So when I went to the conference and I'm telling people we got to look at cloud seeding, and they're saying, I read a paper, 3% yield, coaxing rain, I'm not impressed with cloud seeding as a, they think that a cloud seeding project is just affecting the rain, maybe a little bit, coaxing what's already there, and that it can't affect the whole bigger system. Now, what you, if you're compartmentalizing like that, yeah, I don't see how one car two blocks down is going to kill me when a truck is right across the way if I'm not looking at it. You got to look at the whole picture. So they got them looking at things. They create the right research paper. Like now there's no link between aluminum and Alzheimer's. I can tell you as a massage therapist over the years, I know people that have come across the link definitively. There's other documents that do prove it. I don't have all that information committed to memory, and I'm going to be working on that next. But that's one of the ways they're going to say, well, don't worry about aluminum in the atmosphere when it comes down to it. There's no connection to Alzheimer's. We know better than that. These are the things that they just can't see the significance. And one guy said, whoa, there's some crazy guy planning this, you know, some bad boy planning all of this. And here's what I say to that, although I didn't have the time to tell him this, but if you find a dead body in the road, and it turns out everyone loved him, does that mean he's not dead because you can't figure out who would kill him? No, if you have these trails coming out of planes, and now the Smithsonian, which I'm smarter than because I've been saying this for years, but they just figured it out, that contrails that persist and linger kind of form a natural geoengineering. Hey! But we've been crazy for pointing that out for years. But they just figured it out. Well, they have to start saying it now because the conversation is amping up. Well, yes, they do provide a geoengineering. If it was just natural condensation trail, which condensation trails shouldn't even be happening with the type of engines that we have now, but that's more of a scientific conversation you can do your own research on. But even contrails aren't even supposed to be normal, much less the ones that form weather. And I mean, we know they're not normal. Okay, that's not even open for debate. We see contrails in air conditions and climate conditions that shouldn't even yield persistent contrails by their definition of it. And then we don't see contrails when we should by their definition of it in certain places. Why aren't there contrails today? Nothing changed humidity-wise and temperature-wise up in the sky, and there's not a single contrail? What happened to all the planes that were out the day before spraying? What, the traffic disappeared? Oh, it... there's just like 1/100th the amount of traffic that normally is on contrails, on heavy contrail days, quote unquote. So, I mean, I really don't care if you want to say contrails or just natural air pollution. It has an effect of global warming, and I mean, it might be, we said after September 11th there was no planes that flew that day, and it actually warmed things up, so that cloud coverage does cool things down, but it's a temporary short-term cooling, driving heat by, and it also, by stealing the moisture out of the air, and it dries out the air, it creates holes in the ozone, and don't forget, we have another element, we don't just have chemtrails, because now, speaking at the American Meteorological Society conference, I couldn't just talk, I mean, just talking about contrails, I said, well, it can't do all that by itself anyways. And so, well, there's another component, there's the electromagnetic component. Then you're going to get in those, but that's not their specialty, so they don't want to hear about it. You know, that's not, so I just try to stick to the points here, the facts. But the facts is that most people didn't have enough time to hear all the facts. And we did get to educate a few people on information they didn't have. Like they didn't, a lot of them didn't know about this NASA document saying that cloud coverage is important.
Yeah. Did you get a chance to talk to the local meteorologists in town? Of course, New Orleans. We had, I think Bob Breck retired. There's Carl Arredondo, Margaret Orr. Did you get to speak with any of them?
I did not see them. I saw the El Nino guy. I don't even know who he is, but that's how he identified himself. I'm the El Nino guy, and I kept trying to share the information, and he realized that it was important, but he didn't connect it with it being super important. But right before, we wrote to Margaret Orr, local meteorologist, as a group of climate change concerned citizens to not even address geoengineering right away, to not have her close the door. And granted, it was right before Christmas time, so we didn't expect a response right away, but we haven't heard one back. I'm going to send another one and give her the benefit of the doubt that the email is just... But when I reached out to Bob Beck on Facebook, something funny happened. My name on Facebook used to be Raphael Stop Chemtrails O'Neill. And within 2 hours of reaching out to him, I was forced to take my Stop Chemtrails nickname down. Now, granted, they were kind of doing that with people, starting with the chemtrail community first before the who dat middle names, you know, the nicknames that people have on Facebook.
Yeah, how did that happen? Did they who made you change the name? I've got to know about that. That is very, very important.
I messaged Bob Beck while I was in France. While I was in France, because he commented on something a viewer wrote in saying, and he sent a picture in saying, "What is that?" And he was like, "I don't know. That's pretty weird. You tell me. I've never seen that, but okay, you know." And so I said, well, here's what it is. And by the way, I'd love to talk to you some more. And that was in the evening, and I woke up. I had a weird dream that evening, but that's irrelevant, that I was being censored by. And I woke up, and my name, I had a Facebook message saying, "You can't, your account has been frozen. You must give us your real name." And I was like, oh, I got someone's attention. Now, I don't think, am I blaming Bob Breck for that? No. I don't give him that much credit. But I do believe that they're probably... There's probably somebody watching to make sure the conversation stays.
Facebook censors, more along the Facebook censors than the local. These are local meteorologists that only are only covering the New Orleans area. In case you're wondering who we're talking about.
Yeah, but I also want to tie in just one of the things we heard. We heard from a guy that said that was talking. Nobody there thought geoengineering was a good idea. Not a single person was like, go geoengineering. A couple of them said, well, if it gets bad enough, we're going to need it. But you're ignoring the fact that it's been going on for decades already. Well, then somebody, one guy, once he realized he was being asked questions by people that were kind of curious about geoengineering specifically, and try to trick him saying, does NOAA do weather modification with satellites? You know, and they said no. And then said the NOAA doesn't do weather modification. But here is a National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration Office of Oceanic and Atmospheric Research initial report on weather modification activities form. Okay, so, I mean, hopefully if you dish enough BS to people, they're not as fully equipped in the conversation as you would like them to be, as it's really hard. I've spent 5 years as a layperson trying to just, like a little ant, taking a grain of sand and turning it into a snowball. And I'm not really gifted with research. I've just been so fascinated and unable to turn away that I've, and building on the research that's hiding in plain sight. I really didn't do anything special, and there's a whole bunch of us doing it.
So everything is open to the public that you're talking about. In fact, is it true that about 90% of all weather modifications is not denied by anyone? From what I understand, there's a lot of weather modification that is not denied at all.
It's minimized. Oh, that's just a cloud seeding project. That's why I'm like, okay, let's forget chemtrails.
Well, what about the HARP? I mean, no one's denying HARP. That it is going on and it can change the atmosphere. They know that if you heat up the sky, it can stop rain. That's not denied at all.
Well, we even had the Air Force admitting that they manage the ionosphere and they have done it through HARP in the committee meeting to see if they continue the use of HARP. So when they said they closed the HARP facility a while ago or that they can't get any more use out of it, that was just more of a publicity thing because they don't really even need HARP. HARP could just be the thing you're looking at, but not the thing that's doing it. They have ground arrays that work with them. They have other people are seeing storms and tornadoes being stimulated around NEXRAD stations. You see that feedback and on the radar. Now they're talking about gravity waves. So that whatever we discover, that the name they have a little name for it that they like to credit it. But what we're doing is we're seeing electromagnetic interference with storms. We're seeing. I mean, now we're naming winter storms now. Forget the hurricane. You know, and then when I, I noticed weather modification before I realized it was weather modification when I saw a warm front coming from the Arctic and a cold front coming from the Bahamas one time. And I looked at it and I said, did you guys see that? And one other person caught it like, that was weird, wasn't it? And I said, what the hell was that? So, like, you remember, like, the comet used to go west to east, and now we have these land hurricanes?
All right, now that is true. Just this January was a named hurricane. Is that the first time?
You mean a named winter storm?
Well, it was a hurricane in January that was named. Well, it may not have gotten to a hurricane, but a storm status.
A storm status.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not exactly sure what the Guinness Book status
well,
is.
Well, I know it's 75 miles per hour before you get a name, so at least it got to 75.
But I mean, the status of historical significance, whether, I mean, I know it's outside of the hurricane season, although with this weather, it's just an extended monsoon season. Well, hey, that happened.
Yeah, let's not forget Sandy. Hurricane Sandy happened in November with a cold front blasting through New Orleans, which we know if there's a cold front, there is no hurricane. It'll chop them right off. But, 2,000 miles to the north, we're taking out New York and the entire East Coast. Think about that now. The entire East Coast, just like the entire Gulf Coast, was taken out. And believe me, it's global corporations from one end to the other that did the rebuilding. All the mom and pops are gone.
So look, yeah, so you don't care about this, not your issue. You got better things to do. What better thing you gonna do when you're evacuating because your whole coast is being bombarded with weather you're not used to dealing with?
Or have never dealt with before. There has never been a Katrina-sized hurricane to hit New York in the wintertime. It's just not normal. It never happens. Tornadoes do not take out entire towns. We've always known that. They'll take out a house, skip a few, miss over. They do not level towns if they're a normal hurricane. How do you know if it's not a normal event? Because it's not acting normally, all right?
And
you see, let me say this. I have a house in Bay St. Louis. It's been taken down two times, Camille and Katrina. All right, so what I'm saying is Hurricane Camille was a natural storm. The true devastation was 35 miles wide, all right? Hurricane Katrina, it was four states wide, the devastation. So that's the difference, all right? That's the difference. If you look, easy research, look up tornadoes each year. Look up every single year, and they'll give you the records. Well, suddenly we have 4,000 more tornadoes in one year than we had ever before. There you go. I mean, right. It's really not deep research. That's Wikipedia stuff.
And when I tell people, like, okay, you know, you're going to care about this issue. You may not care about it on the front end when we're talking, but you'll care about it on the back end when it gets your hiney ho. I mean, I'm sorry to laugh, but I've been crying, and you just, you know, you talk, and people laugh, and it's like, you know, you're laughing at your own demise here, because this is documented. And usually the people that laugh are the people without any time to commit to researching the subject.
All right, that's the one thing that I've got to talk to you about. Now, the fact that our weather is being manipulated and there are lines across the sky from one horizon to the next, that to me is unbelievable, but not quite as unbelievable as people that you can point right to it and they think you're nuts. Now, how do they pull this off? I mean, there's nothing more visible than a chemtrail, all right? And it's one of the things that you will just... I kind of know exactly what's going on. When you hit someone like this with this information, their head is wired in a certain way, and you just short-circuited their brain, and it kind of probably hurt them, you know, so when they see that, you just rewire them, and things you're saying are not computing because they have been programmed through social engineering for it not to compute.
Their reality is built on lies. That's the problem, is the reality is built on lies. So you come with some truth, and it doesn't fit in anywhere in the paradigm that they've created to function in this lie-ridden world. And I mean, I'm sure your viewers are not new to this concept, so we're not telling anybody anything. But the more you research, the more you realize how little truth there is, and how the very foundation is built on lies. And nothing is more, I think, exemplary of that than than this subject because it is so well documented. Here right now, Gary's looking at my educational display. I have printouts just to stop repeating myself or for easy reference to show people the research, because you can't, you end up sounding them like a mad person trying to go all over the place explaining this. But here's another thing I wanted to say before, definitely on this subject. There's the World Meteorological Organization said in 2007 that in recent years there has been a decline in support for weather modification research and a tendency to move directly into operational projects. Okay, it's World Meteorological Organization. It's not hidden. But here's another thing that people were saying, another disconnect with the meteorologists at the American Meteorological Society conference in New Orleans just a few weeks ago. It's too costly. And I didn't have my facts lined up at the time, but I knew I had it in my mind, and I went back and researched it before your show because I wanted it. Exactly, share exactly why that is a huge myth. The first movie that introduced me to this subject, it doesn't cover every aspect of it, but it was a great introduction, and then I believe it was Fate and Divine Intervention that I went out and I saw the biggest example of geoengineering I would see for months to come on the day that I happened to see this movie, What in the World Are They Spraying? And in it, it starts like these activists are kind of found themselves in a geoengineering conference where David Keith, who was on the Colbert Report, talking about these crazy scientists might have to do it one day. He wrote a book on it. He's tied to the Royal Society, which are really big pushers of geoengineering. This is what he says about it. Okay. He says, you go to an engineering and you want this done. They don't say this is hard or unusual. They say, okay, yes, we can do this. Aerosol engineering looks like it's so cheap that the cost is basically not going to be an issue. That means that the problem of implementation decision is risk to risk. The risk of doing it versus the risk of not doing it makes the problem of how we govern fundamentally harder different. So, I told you it's cheap to deliver a material to the stratosphere, and I'm convinced that's true. I don't think that will change. But the more we do research, the less easy this will look, the more complicated the environmental effects will look, and that's a good thing. Because right now, it looks too easy. So, if we do more research, we're likely to find out it's harder and more complicated than we thought, and that the side effects are harder to manage, and that's a healthy outcome, and that will make it easier to do the magic. The magic. Okay, pause. What is the magic that he is referencing? Okay, that question number one. Back on, quote, of course, the opposite reaction is possible. It's an empirical question, how people will react to this, to knowledge about this. Another reaction is to say, well, if these crazy scientists are so concerned about putting CO2 in the atmosphere that they want to think about these things, then they might want to become more serious about the risks of CO2 in the atmosphere. And by the way, it's not really a moral hazard. It's more like free riding on our grandkids. End quote. I don't have grandkids, but I got a kid, and I know, Gary, you got grandkids, and I know a lot of my friends have grandkids, and I don't know a single one of them want a free ride on their little heads. So what is he just saying? This took me a few times to listen before I got it, so let me explain to you. They want to make this look complicated. They want to make it look not so cheap. We don't know the effects. It is disastrous. This came out of what? What did this information come out of? May 5th, 2008, Council on Foreign Relations meeting on unilateral planetary scale geoengineering. Okay, now if you guys don't know who the Council on Foreign Relations is, I recommend you go look at the next president, Hillary Clinton, talking about, because that's where the propaganda is written for her to be in office, but I might be wrong, I'm predicting, this is my prediction, note it here. But when she talks about, oh, it's a good thing that the CFR is moving next door to the White House so that we don't have to go far to know what to do, to be told. So anyway, that's who is running the world. And they want unilateral. They don't want a bunch of small people like you and I doing engineering for our own good of the people. They want their own, they want to control the on and off switch. And we're just here to tell everybody this has been going on, this is what they're up to, and this is why global warming is not going away. Because until everybody wakes up to climate engineering, climate change will continue.
All right. Looks like we're ready for a documentary, Raphael. I think the time has come. So look forward in the future on Gary King YouTube. We're going to make a documentary about this, and we're going to get it all out at one time so this woman can take a break. All right. You've been listening to Patriot Radio New Orleans 2016, Show 3. Thank you very much for being on.
Thank you, Gary, and thank you to your listeners.
And don't forget, she'll be on The Real Deal with Dr. James Fetzer on Media Broadcasting Center coming up in 2 days, and we'll make sure you get to that one, too.